Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Today on the program, we're going to be talking about something that, in one sense, I'm really unqualified to talk about, and many of you are more qualified. However, let me tell you, for intelligent Christian conversation, how's this one for a question? What do women really want? And I'll tell you why we're asking the question. First of all, Maureen Dowd, on Sunday, wrote a fascinating column entitled Blue is the New Black, blue referring to depression here, indicating that some three decades after the feminist revolution, many women are now very dissatisfied with their situation. And by the way, they are dissatisfied, according to their self-reporting here, even if they get what they want, or what they say they want, or what they thought they wanted, or what their mothers in the feminist movement thought they wanted for them. It's a very interesting article. Maureen Dowd is always provocative, and in this case, I think she really raises a question that we ought to have an intelligent Christian conversation about. Really interesting stuff here. According to the General Social Survey, which has tracked the mood of Americans since 1972, get this, women are getting gloomier and men are getting happier. And what's really amazing is this study is kind of throwing out new research. The trend line is that as women get older, many of them grow less happy. And as men get older, they grow more satisfied. So let's talk about why that's so. In particular, what is it that women want? What do we learn 3 years, 3 decades, that is, after the feminist revolution? What have we learned about what would make women happy? Now, there is no way that we can, in this conversation, take on the entire question of half of the human race. We can take on, from a Christian perspective, however, what kind of Christian biblical response, intelligently, should frame our consideration of this question. What should women want? What do women want? What do Christian women want? And why should they want what they want? Let's talk about it today on the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is not a touchy-feely show. I'm not good at that. That's not who I am. This is not a counseling show. This is not a show in which we're trying on this program to figure out how to emote. We're figuring out how to think. And while we're trying to figure out how to think, here's a good subject for our thinking. What do women want and why? And from a Christian perspective, what should women want, and what would make them satisfied, happy? As they grow older, what would make them more satisfied rather than less satisfied? I think this is a fascinating question. When I saw this research, it just struck me that this is the kind of thing we need to talk about. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Now, coincidentally, by the way, as I'll discuss later, there are some fascinating new studies coming out having to do with women in the workplace, women not in the workplace, women who are at home with their children, and women who are not at home with their children. New census data out that also is a part of this picture. And then at First Things, one of the nation's leading intellectual magazines, Mary Eberstadt, has an article entitled, What Does Woman Want? So evidently a lot of people are thinking about this. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And we're always glad to hear from you by mail. Email us at mail@albertmohler.com, and even here, as the program is live, we're glad to get your questions or comments and try to get as many of those as we can on the air. And the same with Twitter and Facebook. At Facebook, it's the Albert Mohler Program. At Facebook, very simply there, just go to the page, and you can post your comments or question. And also at Twitter. The Twitter address is just twitter.com/Albert Mohler or Mohler Radio. We're going to get to those issues in just a moment. The big question: what do women want? What does woman want? What should women want? All right, first to review some other issues in the news. Now, as President Bill Clinton was in office, he was often known for trying to find a middle way on everything. And his political reputation, not so much his personal reputation, but his political reputation, was based upon his own self-declared mission in his first inaugural address to heal the breach, quoting from the scripture. Now, well, he's changed his mind on another issue, and it appears that this is a politician who knows how to place himself as close as possible, right in the mainstream of where he thinks America is. So that's what's really interesting in this story to me. It's not so much that President Bill Clinton has changed his mind on same-sex marriage. It's that, given who he is and how he has operated politically, he evidently thinks this is pretty much where America is now. Let me just read to you. This is from CNN, as Bill Clinton appeared on CNN's Anderson Cooper program, and Mr. Cooper asked him about same-sex marriage. The president, former president, said this, that while he still believes the issue should be left up to the states, he is no longer personally opposed to same-sex marriage as he once was. Quote, I was against the constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage nationwide, and I still think that the American people should be able to play this out in debates. End quote. But me, Bill Clinton, personally, I changed my position. I'm no longer opposed to that. I think if people want to make commitments that last a lifetime, they ought to be able to do it. End quote. Now, the particular interesting part of this, rooted in history, is that the Defense of Marriage Act was signed into law by President Bill Clinton when he was in office. The Defense of Marriage Act is a federal law that states very clearly that no state is obligated to recognize a same-sex marriage performed in any other state. And again, at that point, the political composition of this country, the will of this country, the clear majority opinion in this country was against the recognition of same-sex marriage, and this was a president who signed that bill. Now, by the way, in order for him to sign it, it had to pass by majorities in both House and the Senate, and it did, and it arrived on his desk, and he signed it, and now he says that he has changed his mind. Well, I think the most important aspect of this is that America is changing its mind on this. I think it's moving in the wrong direction. I think this will be injurious to marriage, to the culture itself, to society, and to so many countless human lives. But I think just in terms of kind of reading the signs of the times around us, this is a politician who's among the very best at recognizing where the American people are and where they're going. This tells us something, and it should be fodder for some very careful thinking on the part of Christians as we think about this issue. And, you know, the inevitability of same-sex marriage is an argument being made by many. I'll tell you, it looks inevitable, but I'm unwilling to sign on to the conclusion that it is inevitable. Nationwide. We'll be talking about this more and more in days to come, but this is nonetheless a very interesting turn in the story. Speaking of interesting turns in the story, the assisted suicide debate in Great Britain has taken another turn when the director of public prosecutions there in Great Britain says that family members who wish to help persons who are terminally ill commit suicide will not be criminally prosecuted in Great Britain. Now, here's another issue in which you have politicians really doing something very slippery. In fact, I think slippery is a rather kind word to use in this. The law in Great Britain is clear. The law is not in question. Everybody knows what the law says. The law says that assisted suicide is a criminal act. But there is great emotional energy in Great Britain not to criminally prosecute family members and friends who help persons to commit suicide. And so now you have the director of public prosecution somebody saying we're not going to prosecute these cases. Now, this is, I would argue, an intellectually, culturally, morally indefensible way to deal with the issue. If indeed the people in Great Britain are going to go so far as to change the law and legalize assisted suicide, I would find that a tragedy, but at least it would be honest. But having a law on the books and just refusing to prosecute, I find that very dishonest. And by the way, in the United States, some of this pattern is evident. For instance, you have locales where they simply will not prosecute prostitution issues. They will not prosecute marijuana possession or the sale of marijuana cases because they just decided they're not going to prosecute those cases. And again, that's just a dishonest way to deal with the law. Again, as in the case of Bill Clinton on same-sex marriage, this also tells us that there is movement in that society in Great Britain on the issue of assisted suicide, because there is no longer the political will on the part of the people of that nation to prosecute persons who assist others to commit suicide. It also tells us that the question hasn't gone full circle. Just as with the same-sex marriage issue in the United States, it hasn't gone full circle. It's in motion. There's still an opportunity to have a voice and to exert an influence and to earnestly pray about the outcome of that debate and that issue. So also in assisted suicide, there is still time. The very fact that they haven't changed the law means that there's still resistance to the acceptance of assisted suicide. Here's a question for you. Does a nation need God to be happy? The French president, Nicolas Sarkozy, is shifting the consideration in that country of its well-being to a series of markers having to do with all kinds of attitudinal and lifestyle issues. But one of the most interesting questions coming out of this is, given the secularity of the nation of France, is it possible for people to be happy without God? Very interesting social experiment that involves not only France, but many other European countries as well. Also, to a significant degree, Canada to our north, marking the same kind of secular patterns. Be interesting to see how long it is before people ask the same questions about the United States of America. We'll see. We're going to come back to ask the question, what do women want? Please help me with that. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. I'll tell you why we're talking about this today. Again, Maureen Dowd's column in the New York Times on Sunday. She talks about the General Social Survey, which has tracked the mood of Americans since 1972, also looks at other studies around the world. And this research suggests, Maureen Dowd reports, that women are getting gloomier and men are getting happier. And as they get older, the women get more gloomy and the men get more happy. She writes, before the 70s, there was a gender gap in America in which women felt better. They felt greater well-being. Now it's men who feel better about their lives. Now, Maureen Dowd is a feminist. And yet, I'll have to tell you, the first thing I think of when I read this and think about the estate of women and the perhaps the mood, to use this word, of American women since the 1970s, I have to wonder to what degree has feminism really failed? It's really loaded with information here. She offers several suggestions why, as women get older, they might be less happy. One of the things she says here is that it gets easier for men in terms of appearance as they get older and harder for women. Well, I'm not sure about all that, but I'll tell you this. I can tell from this survey data that there's a real story here. But I'm pretty convinced that as a man, I'm not best equipped to understand this from the perspective of women. But I will tell you, from a Christian worldview perspective, I think there's a lot at stake here. And I want to invite you to call and join the conversation. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. With callers have been coming in, we're looking forward to more. Let's go to Mifflintown, Pennsylvania. Bonnie's on the line. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about mom's workplaces. And I said, I feel, you know, they're trying to make mom a bad word anymore. What do you do? Oh, I'm a mom. Well, I said, what better thing can you do is to raise wonderful children, good, wholesome children. As a parent, your influence is on them to put good, wholesome children back out into society, et cetera, et cetera. When you put a child with a babysitter, you're running the risk of their values and their thoughts being put in your child's mind, and I don't think that's a good idea.
Bonnie, let me ask you a quick question. I think we may have lost you there, but are you saying that women fundamentally want to be mothers? And of course, you're generalizing here, but when you say what do women want, that's it.
I think, you know, say what you will, and I'm a nurse, and I think it's an inborn instinct. I mean, there's few mothers, of course, don't have that, but I'm telling you, from the time I was small, I wanted to be a mom. I wanted to raise good, happy, healthy children. I wanted to have good Christian moral values. I don't see, you're probably getting a lot of calls over this, but I don't see anything wrong with a little smack in the butt if they don't listen. This timeout stuff, who cares?
Okay, Bonnie, thank you. We can only take so many issues in one program, but by the way, we talked about that one last week, and I agree with you. But in terms of what women want, the issue to be a mom, I don't think any other culture at any other time would think that is anything but profoundly obvious. And it was helpful for Bonnie to make that clear, especially in a mom's voice. Let's go to Kalamazoo, Michigan. Lynn's on the line. Go ahead, Lynn.
Hi, Dr. Moeller. I think one thing that women should want is we should want what God wants. I believe that we should submit to God and we should obey Him. And I believe that we should submit to our husbands. And I think when we submit to God and desire what He wants, that we will submit to our husbands. And I think we should all have a very healthy fear of God, and that we should be obedient to God and understand how He has set up headship, and we need to respect that.
A fundamentally Christian argument. Stay here with me for a moment, Lynn. Let me just, and I want to affirm everything you said very kindly, clearly, and convictionally said. Lynn, let me ask the question the way that Maureen Dowd asked it. Why do you think the many women in America say that as they get older, they're becoming less satisfied rather than more satisfied? And by the way, it's Maureen Dowd who points back to 1972 and says before that, women were happier by their own reflection than they are now. Why would you think that is so?
Say that again.
Why do you think many women say that they are less happy now than women reported themselves to be three decades ago?
Well, I can tell you why I was less happy. It took me 48 years to realize this, because I think we've listened to so many voices out in the culture, and I've just recently realized that I need to listen to God. I need to listen to what the Bible says. When I raised my sons, and they both left the house at the same time, and I kept thinking, I need to go out and get a full-time job, and I just kept beating myself up. I need to go to school and learn a new trade and this kind of a thing. And I finally stopped beating myself up, and I work part-time, and I think I'm more beneficial going back into church and doing volunteer work and maybe leading a Bible study and teaching other young mothers that you're more valuable at home raising your children, and that I've got a lot of wisdom that I can train other young mothers that they're more valuable at home raising their children and teaching values and that kind of thing, instead of, you know, that I just need to go push myself out in some kind of job.
I appreciate that. Excuse me, we're about to lose you there. You know, when you think about that, by the way, in terms of the influence of feminism, and you try to figure out what that looks like, I've got to come back to the fact that feminism for the last three decades and more has been saying to women what you should want is professional success and social esteem and the kind of cultural respect that comes by holding a job. And that's what Lynn was saying. She's not thinking is the right way to be satisfied. And the fact is that many women have done that, and they're just not feeling like it's delivering on its promises. And undoubtedly, I think there are many women who look back and say, I wish that I had made a different decision. I wish that I stayed home with my children. I wish that I'd had children. I wish that I'd had more children. I wish that I had ordered my life in this way rather than that way. And I realize that there are women who are not working because they choose to work. But when it comes down to where women have a choice, and that's the whole promise of feminism, is that women should have a choice in everything, I just think a lot of the choices that feminism encouraged, indeed kind of browbeat women into thinking they were supposed to make, do not deliver the happiness that the feminists were sure was so. And I'm stunned, by the way. Maureen Dowd's a very intelligent woman. I've met her. She wrote a book entitled Are Men Necessary? A very interesting book from a feminist perspective. And my friend Mark Dever and I happened to be with her at a public event, and she signed a book to me, To a Necessary Man. So Maureen Dowd said, I'm necessary. I'm very affirmed in that. But let me just come back and say that she's a very intelligent woman, and she must detect in her own column what she really raises here. When she says, look, you know, women used to report themselves happier than now. And I just can't but think that feminism is a part of that. We've got callers on the line. We're going to get to those calls in just a moment. And you could be next. If you're asked the question, why do you think so many women, according to this research, report themselves less happy now than in the past? Then why do you think it's so? And, you know, happiness is not the most important thing about us. This is a very important contextual issue for us. We should not assume that this is the most important question in the world, for women or for men. God did not primarily create us for our happiness. He created us for His glory. It just so happens we'll find our greatest joy where we find the greatest display of God's glory. Our effort to create our own happiness is just about as successful as our effort to create our own righteousness. It's pretty much a crash and burn. And I think this is an issue that will really help men as well as women as we think about the question, what do women want? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back with your calls.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. We're back to the conversation. What do women want? What should women want? The spark for our conversation is a column by Maureen Dowd in Sunday's edition of the New York Times. Really, really interesting stuff. What she's arguing here is that as women get older, they grow less happy. This is coming from the General Social Survey. There's clear social science research behind this. But let me tell you, there's some argument here that well, you need to hear this, and you're going to want to talk about it. The person she quotes in her article is Marcus Buckingham, who used to be with the Gallup organization. And he says this: the women begin their lives more fulfilled than men. As they age, they gradually become less happy. He goes on to say, men, in contrast, get happier as they get older. Choice is inherently stressful, he says, and women are being driven to distraction. Now, here is Maureen Dowd's paragraph. I want you to listen to this. And I don't know if she's hearing what she writes here or how she would answer it herself, but here's what she says. When women stepped into male-dominated realms, they put more demands and stress on themselves. If they once judged themselves on looks, kids, hubbies, gardens, and dinner parties, now they judge themselves on looks, kids, hubbies, gardens, dinner parties, and grad school, work, office deadlines, and meshing a two-career marriage. She goes on and says, the more important things that are crowded into their lives, the less attention women are able to give to each thing. Now, I think, by the way, by any analysis, she's got to be right in that point. And yet, those are the very things that the feminist movement insisted that women should want. And I'm just asking. That's not fair. I'm not just asking. I'm thinking that's just wrong. I'm asking if you agree with it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Linda's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Linda.
I think there's a lot of validity to what she says, but, you know, I think you really hit it on the head, Dr. Mohler, when you said you read that little comment about being a necessary man. That's exactly what women want. We want to know that we're necessary, that we're valued, that we are significant, whether it's in our work roles, our home roles, wherever it is. We want to know we make a difference, that we matter.
Yeah, did we lose you there, Linda? We're having some kind of phone issue here today, but let me tell you, you know, I think your point is about humanity, and I think you basically made that yourself. That's what everybody wants, both male and female, is to know that our life is significant. You know, and this is where I have to go back, and Linda, I think this is the direction you were taking there. I think one of the issues is that what we're told we must have in order to have a significant life is part of the issue. And what a lot of women have been told, and the kind of the mantra that's been coming from the feminist movement is, you should want career. You should want social status. You should want an independent identity. You should want this. You should want that. And what's driving the feminist crazy? And by the way, this is very, very clear in a lot of literature that's going on right now within the feminist movement, is that there are women who are opting out of that. That's the phrase, opting out. And instead deciding what they really want is motherhood and to be home with their children and to do many of the other things that the feminists said were stereotypically oppressive to women. And, you know, to me as a Christian theologian, I have to tell you, what this means, I think, is that the image of God in both the man and the woman cries out to us that God made us for a purpose. And I think over against even these messages, both women and men tend to gravitate toward that purpose. Men towards a world of work and women towards a very clear commitment to doing what they can do better than anyone else. And that's the domestic sphere and the raising of women, of children. And, you know, there are people who are going to hear me say that and say, well, that's just more stereotypical kind of thinking coming from a conservative Christian. Well, I mean, the spark for this article is Maureen Dowd in the New York Times, not something in Christianity Today or World Magazine. We're talking about a conversation going on in the secular world. Let's go to Lindsay, calling from Louisville, Kentucky, also listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Lindsay.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. I had a question for you. What if you as a family feel called to full-time ministry, but you are just in a position where you can't financially stay at home full-time? What would be your suggestion?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by full-time ministry there, Lindsay, but when you cannot stay home because you're not financially able, well, you know, I will pray, as I'm sure you're praying, to get into a position where you are financially able. If that doesn't happen, then you're going to have to just cope with it as you will, knowing that, as the Apostle Paul said, we're to find joy and contentment in whatsoever state we are. But obviously there are greater challenges for you in that, and for a mom who has to work and be outside the home. And this is not to criticize by any means those who have to work, especially single moms, but also just moms who have to work in order to make the ends meet. Once you really determine what those ends should be, well, then you got to trust that a sovereign God has you just where he wants you in that respect, or to respond to it in the way that would be healthiest and to his glory. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, how this kind of story, question, issue gets put before the public is a matter sometimes of, well, just sheer fascination to me. I want to tell you why. I have two different newspapers in my hand. The New York Times, business section, and the local page and the business page of the Nashville Tennessean. These are within 4 days of each other, okay? Headline, New York Times, back to the grind. Recession drives women who left the workforce to return. All right? Headline number two, 4 days later, a different newspaper. Here's the headline. Recession, family ties compel more moms to stay at home. Okay? The New York Times says more moms are going into the workforce, and over here, the Nashville Tennessean says more are staying at home. You got to look at the data. So I took some time. I thought, well, you know, this is a case of clear media bias one way or the other. Let's figure out what's going on. And when you start to look at the statistics, well, here are a couple of things. The first story, the New York Times, is about women, regardless of whether they are moms of school-aged children or not. The Nashville Tennessean's article is about moms. So here's the deal. As more women are in the workforce, fewer moms are now in the workforce. Now, if you're a feminist, that's a problem. A huge controversy within feminism over those who were opting out of the feminist mandate that women should find their primary identity through profession and that choice. But it's a fascinating topic. It leads us to our question today. What do women want? What should women want from a Christian perspective? The phone number is 877-893-8255. Veronica is calling from Sanford, Florida, listening on WTLN. Go ahead, Veronica.
Hi, I was just saying, I'm hitting my 40s, and I'm in that age group that was taught that career is everything. But and I was a primary breadwinner, and it's not that great a job. right now I'm a stay-at-home mom, and what I'm finding with my friends is that those of those who really believed in that and didn't have an intercession like I did later on in my life, they are disappointed because they thought that they could wait to have kids till later, but now they're finding out that they can't. They thought they could have all the sex they wanted to when they were younger, but now they've got a disease that's keeping them from having a child. They can't find a man. You know, you keep hearing about how I'm a black woman, and you keep hearing how successful black women can't find men, which kind of makes you think that, what am I, unsuccessful because I found a husband?
Oh, my. Veronica, that is such a fascinating point. By the way, this general social survey indicates that African-American women report themselves happier than non-African-American women. Slightly, it says here. And, you know, one of the issues raised in this is that it may be that a higher percentage right now of African-American women are moms than non-African-American women. And maybe that has something to do with it. And I tell you, you have a delightful way of expressing, you know, exactly where you think many women your age are. And you say they want it all, but it's not possible. I have to tell you, I think men have some of those same recognition points. And I'm about to turn 50. And I'll tell you, you know, looking at that, there are things I realize now I'm never going to be able to do. You know, Veronica, I'll tell you something. This is what's been hard for me. President Barack Obama is younger than I am. This is the first time a president of the United States is younger than I am. Somehow, That makes me feel really old. But all of a sudden I realize, you know, there are things I'm not going to do. There are things I'm never going to get, I'm never going to have the experience of doing, places I'm never going to go, books I'm never going to write, because jobs I'm never going to have. And I'll tell you the truth, I can envision all kinds of things I'd love to do, but this is the one thing I'm called to do. And yet somehow, Veronica, I think men do not have put on us what feminism puts on so many women, which is, if you don't do this, you're letting down the team. And that is the very expression that was used in a book that I dealt with here on this program not too long ago, with a woman who said, if women don't want it all, they're letting down the team. And Veronica, you're not letting down the team. And I think that's a very important thing for us to be able to say. And, you know, our finitude, the limits that are put upon us as human beings are very, very important. God makes us all as human beings very finite, because it shows his infinite character and nature and power, and also reminds us that there's only one life to live, and that's, we hope and pray, to be lived to God's glory. Amy wrote something very interesting here. She said, I agree. Feminism is totally a reason why women are less happy. She continued writing, we are pushed around to go out and contribute to society when a lot of us believe we are doing that by raising a child or children. I hear from a lot of people as my daughter gets older, and she's 4 now. So what are you going to do when she goes to school? When are you going back to work? No wonder we are never satisfied. We are constantly being told that what we are doing isn't enough. It's not just taking care of our children. We also take care of our spouse, and that is a very unpopular concept. End quote. Well, Amy, let me tell you, it's very popular with me. Because if my dear wife Mary were not taking care of me, I wouldn't be taken care of. And so let me just tell you, you know, for all the husbands out there who are so well cared for by their wives, let me just say, I think that's a great vocation. And I say that with such great respect and love for Mary, and with the just humble admission that that men, we're just not very good at taking care of ourselves. And by the way, little data point on that, just happened to read in part of the conversation about the healthcare debate that the least likely person in America to go for a physical exam is an unmarried adult male. Okay? That ought to tell you something. The difference between an unmarried adult male and a married adult male is that the married adult male has a wife who says, you need to go have a physical exam. And then she takes the next step, which is to actually schedule the physical exam. And then she takes the next step, which is to make sure you remember to go for the physical exam. And without that, we're becoming health statistics. So that's kind of an extraneous point, but it goes back to, what do women want? Well, thankfully, a lot of women find themselves finding true joy where God's glory is found, in the right ordering of their lives, and especially as women follow what the Bible very clearly presents as a norm, not just as a majority expectation, but as a norm for what women are made for the glory of God. And women can do so many magnificent things. There are women who are never married and never have children, but for the sake of the gospel, give themselves to a life of ministry. There are women who have given themselves in so many different ways to the kingdom of Christ and to the glory of God. But the reality is that in every place where either a man or a woman is living out all that God has called him or her to be in faithfulness and finds joy and satisfaction in that, the glory of God shines round about them. Wherever there's just one couple rightly ordered, one family rightly established, and even one believer in Christ living out the fullness of life for the glory of God, there's a witness to the gospel right there. Back to final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. Well, we got one comment there on Facebook that's worthy of mention, and it's from a man answering the question, what do women want, listening to this conversation, participating in it. He writes, well, I'm not a woman, but I think happiness depends on what happens. Joy is something that proceeds from within you regardless of your circumstances. Well, that's a good Christian clarification. It's the kind of clarification men and women need, both of us, in order to understand that happiness is a very ephemeral thing. Happiness is the kind of thing, maybe you put a smiley face on your desk one day and a frowning face on your desk the next. Maybe even from one minute to the next, happiness goes up and down. But joy is a matter of Christian contentment. And true joy, as it's found in Christ, is found in being satisfied in him. And as the Apostle Paul said, being satisfied in whatsoever state we find ourselves, because we are satisfied most fundamentally in Christ. Folks, a lot of Christians are giving attention today to a promised march scheduled in Washington, D.C., a prayer gathering in the nation's capital, more than a march of Muslims. And Muslim organizers had hoped for 50,000 Muslims to gather at the capital for the regularly scheduled afternoon prayer for Friday. According to the Washington Post, approximately 1,000 persons gathered Friday morning on the west front lawn of the Capitol, even as others were coming in. And they had called for a day of Muslim unity about prayer, they said, not protest. Jacqueline Salmon, writing for the Washington Post, says organizers had hoped for 50,000 worshipers, but they said many people have been frightened away by the backlash against the event. Some conservative Christian groups and bloggers have been calling it anti-Christian and un-American. You know, the bottom line on this is we have to remember that religious liberty is religious liberty. And the last things Christians should do is to call for the liberty rights of others, for non-Christians, to be curtailed. We need to be very, very careful that religious liberty means that that we are a society that has declared a freedom of religious expression, and that's ensconced within our Constitution. And conservative Christians had better be the very first to be reluctant to try to limit the expression others will make, because that is nothing more than, first of all, an act that is a dagger at the very heart of our own commitment to religious liberty, and is an act of precedent that leaves us morally in the position where we can hardly claim these liberties for ourselves when we deny them to others. The right way to respond to this is with the gospel. The right way to respond to this is to see it as an opportunity to be reminded of what's at stake in terms of the battle for souls, the true nature of reaching the American people with the gospel. And as we are in a more religiously diverse and culturally pluralistic age, we need to realize that we've got an even bigger job than we thought we had before, regardless of how many Muslims showed up to pray at the Capitol this afternoon. Back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.